From NPR News, this is Weekends on All Things Considered. Guy Raz is away. I'm Rachel Martin. We're following the unrest in the Middle East this hour, and we'll bring you the latest from the Turkey-Syria border as refugees try to escape a crackdown by the Syrian regime. But we begin tonight with news of a break-in with global repercussions. The New York Times is reporting that the International Monetary Fund has been hacked, a victim of what officials quoted in the Times are calling a sophisticated and serious cyber attack. It's just the latest in a string of high-profile hack jobs. This week, Spanish officials made three arrests in an attack on Sony that revealed the personal information of 77 million account holders. And Citigroup revealed that it, too, had been hacked and that 200,000 credit card holders were affected. That's our cover story today. Hackers aiming high. What are they after? What's the government doing about it? And could Apple's new iCloud be next? Last year, at a convention in New York City, a group of computer hackers gathered in a hotel ballroom for a panel discussion called...
This talk is called Informants, Villains, or Heroes.
Informants, the hackers knew, were becoming a bigger and bigger problem in their community. These were hackers who'd cooperate with the government, rat out other hackers, in exchange for reduced punishment for their own crimes.
And we all have stories in our lives as to how informants have played a part one way or another.
And the consensus was things were getting pretty serious.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, in the hacker world, the odds are, what is it, 1 in 4, 1 in 5? It's a ridiculous percentage. But the number of people who become informants...
That's the panel moderator, Emmanuel Goldstein, estimating to an audience of hackers that 1 in 4 of them is an informant, usually working with the FBI.
And the question that I think we need to ask here today is, why do people do this? Why does this happen?
Also sitting on this panel was Adrian Lamo. He's probably the most well-known informant of this century, an ex-hacker who turned in Bradley Manning, that's the U.S. soldier who released the WikiLeaks documents. Lamo was treated like a turncoat.
And what you did is worse than treason. I think you belong in Guantanamo.
Whoa.
Okay. Thank you.
If you didn't get that, he says, I think you belong in Guantanamo. Things were tense in this room. And outside the panel, what's the atmosphere in the larger hacker community?
The overriding one is a sense of paranoia and fear.
Ed Pilkington covers hacking for the Guardian newspaper.
Because they don't really know who's doing what. It seems such an extraordinary contradiction. Here is this community, which, you know, in popular sort of vision, is a community of anarchists, of anti-establishment people. And yet here are so many of them actually acting as the eyes and ears, as virtual spies on behalf of the FBI and the Secret Service.
But still, 1 in 4 hackers is an FBI informant? That number seemed high to us.
I believe the number is much higher. I don't know of any case that involved computer hacking where there was multiple defendants charged, where there wasn't an informant on the case.
That is Kevin Mitnick.
I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm an information security consultant, and I have an interesting history. So.
As a kid, Mitnick found he had a knack for what was then called phone freaking, essentially hacking phones before there were computers.
When I got pretty adept with manipulating the phone company's systems, I was able to pull pranks. Like, I remember one where I was able to change a friend's home telephone, change their class of service to that of a payphone, so whenever he or his parents would pick up the phone to make a call, it would say...
The call you have made requires a 25-cent deposit.
You know, so I do these, like, crazy things.
Listen for dial tone.
I figured out how to intercept directory assistance for Providence, Rhode Island. So, you know, I'd say, what city? They'd say, you know, Providence. And I'd say, can I have the name, please? And they'd give me the name, and I'd go, yeah, that number is, you know, 554-21537. They'd go, what? 554-21537. Well, how do I dial a half? Oh, you have to go get the new phone.
Fast forward a few years. Mitnick's not just hacking phones. He's breaking into phone companies to hack their computers. He began hacking into the systems of various computer companies just to show that he could. By 1995...
What ended up happening is I was arrested in February 1995.
A man described as the most wanted computer hacker in the world
has been arrested in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Legend has it that Mitnick had been able to break into the highly secret computers at the North American Air Defense Command.
He's now being held on federal charges of computer fraud.
I was even held in solitary confinement for like a year because a federal prosecutor had told a judge that I could somehow pick up the phone, dial a computer at NORAD, and whistle into the phone somehow, connect to their computers, and launch a nuclear weapon.
So could you do that?
Let me practice. I mean, I have to get the tone perfectly. Of course not. I mean that's so ridiculous.
All told, Mitnick did 5 years in jail for wire fraud and computer fraud. His final undoing, a partner of his, another hacker, informed on him, gave Mitnick up for a lesser sentence.
You definitely feel a great sense of betrayal. I mean, if hackers or anyone committing a criminal act wants to reduce their risk, they obviously don't involve anybody else. So the greater the circle of people that know what you're doing, the higher the risk.
Today, the risk and the stakes have never been higher, as more and more personal and financial information has wound up on the web. Hackers have increasingly banded together to attack that information.
And before long, the FBI realized that they had a major problem here.
Again, Guardian reporter Ed Pilkington.
The main group are the carders. Now, they specialize in breaking into databases of credit cards, usually held by banks or credit card companies. They can do millions of dollars of damage in terms of stealing directly from bank accounts or going out with fraudulent credit cards that they create using this database of information.
They do this with very sophisticated attacks, but the FBI has managed to fight them, Pilkington says, using an old-fashioned trick.
It's the trick they use against drug gangs. It's a trick that they use against mobsters and the mafia. You catch a little guy doing a little thing. I'll give you an example. There's this guy called Albert Gonzalez. He was caught fraudulently catching money out of an ATM, which, you know, in the scheme of this stuff, is pretty small beer.
Mm-hmm.
They sprung him from prison, got him a deal so that he was let out early. They then set him up within an FBI office. They paid him $75,000 a year to go out and set up networks, chat rooms, meeting other hackers. And he became essentially a honey trap for big carders and identity theft within the hacking community.
Thing is, that guy, Albert Gonzalez, last year he was given the longest ever prison sentence for hacking, 20 years, because while he was working as an informant for the FBI, he was secretly hacking government agencies and bank accounts. 15 years ago, Kevin Mitnick says things were not this complicated.
When I was a hacker, it was all about pursuit of knowledge, you know, getting a bite of the forbidden apple, so to speak. And then, of course, the challenge and the seduction of adventure. It's kind of like when you're a kid growing up and there's an old abandoned house down the street and you're not supposed to go over into that house.
Except I have to point out, those are 12-year-old boys and they're breaking into an abandoned house, and that's pretty benign. I mean, these are grown people breaking laws.
Right, but when I was hacking, maybe the analogy isn't perfect, but I'm trying to give you a sense of what my driving factor was when I was hacking. Today, it's all changed. Mm. I mean, the trend of hacking today is all profit. Credit card numbers, bank account numbers. For example, Sony recently has suffered, I think, over 17 attacks.
And there's another tech company hackers were probably watching very closely this past week.
So I get to talk about iCloud. We've been working on this for some time now.
That's Apple CEO Steve Jobs announcing iCloud, a new service that will allow Apple users to store all of their email, photos, music, and documents on one central server. That means you can access the photos on your phone from any computer.
By centralizing the data, they've really painted a target on their back.
David Brumley is a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. He says Apple's iCloud is actually a bank of servers in North Carolina in a building the size of 2 football fields.
From the reports, they have barbed wire around the building. They have guards, and you're going to need an ID to get into those buildings. And so the physical security is actually pretty good. It would be a lot like getting onto a military installation to actually get into Apple's iCloud data center. The common thing to do is to serve all this data from this location, but actually to have multiple backups. And so if there was a natural disaster, people may not be able to get at their files right away, but they'd still be somewhere. Apple could still restore them and make them available at a later time.
But so then, as a potential consumer here, as someone who's maybe thinking about putting my data on iCloud, I hear that and that seems like a red flag. Not only am I giving you all of my personal data, it's going to be backed up.
Yep, that's another avenue for attackers. It's also, of course, just a risk because nothing ever goes away if you're ever in a lawsuit or something like that. Of course, someone could subpoena that backup and get that data as well. So there's not just the attackers, there's also just the idea that it's around and someone can get at it.
Well, I mean, actually, I hacked into Apple when I was a hacker, and it wasn't too difficult.
We asked Kevin Mitnick if he could hack into the iCloud.
I mean, I was hired to test this cloud infrastructure in South America. Literally, in the 15 minutes I was on the phone with the CEO of the company and one of their lead technical guys, I was able to compromise and get access that only system administrators should be able to get access to. And then the next day I found a way that I could exploit that server to get full administrative access.
And when you do something like that, do you think to yourself, yeah, I still got it?
No, I do. I have to keep up with this stuff because I'm actually hired by companies to hack into their systems and networks. But anything out there is vulnerable to attack given enough time and resources.
Kevin Mitnick, he spoke to us from our bureau in Culver City. His memoir, Ghost in the Wires, will be published this August. Kevin, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.